Every 13 years, cicadas emerge from the earth, their mating song a deafening chorus of biological urgency. Meanwhile, feral cats multiply behind the barn, turtle hatchlings scramble toward the creek, and eaglets test their wings. Nature's effortless abundance on full display. But inside the sterile waiting room of a fertility clinic, silence reigns. This jarring contrast captures something essential about infertility, the feeling of being disconnected from the most fundamental rhythms of life itself. What happens when your body refuses to participate in what seems like nature's most basic script? Bell Boggs explores this question not through clinical detachment, but through raw honesty, weaving together memoir, biology, literature, and cultural criticism to illuminate the shadowy territory between wanting and having a child. Is baby fever real or just cultural conditioning? Scientists remain divided. We easily find people wanting sex without children, but rarely those wanting children without the intimacy that creates them. Yet something shifts during ovulation. Men find women more attractive, women dress more provocatively, and lap dancers earn twice as much during fertile periods. Finnish sociologist Anna Rotkirch collected accounts from 106 women describing baby fever as an inescapable, unbidden, and often inconvenient fact of life, an all-encompassing desire arriving suddenly and feeling totally biological. Many first noticed it in dreams, experiencing physical sensations starting from my womb and radiating to all parts of my body. Baby fever emerges from complex biology and culture intertwined, leaving those afflicted caught between intellectual resistance and visceral yearning. Literature offers little consolation for the childless, perpetuating prejudices where women without children seem incomplete. The biblical Sarah, barren until 90 before bearing Isaac, reinforces the myth that patient waiting brings reward, making childless characters seem morally suspect. Childlessness appears as socially distorting. In Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, George and Martha's childlessness makes them vitriolic and alcoholic. Miss Havisham and Lady Macbeth reinforce that childlessness breeds villainy. Western culture views conception as God-given, making those not chosen feel broken. Catholic teaching opposes IVF as interfering with divine gift. Pope Benedict XVI likened it to taking the Creator's place. Fantasy children appear surprisingly often. Ella Wheeler Wilcox invented daughter Winifred, Catherine Mansfield fantasized about son Dickie, Dr. Seuss created imaginary chrysanthemum pearl. Imagination proves both transgressive and necessary for survival. Yet literature rarely explores medical intervention to conceive, perpetuating stereotypes rather than offering nuanced representations of reproductive challenges. The procedures lack dignity. Hormone injections, transvaginal ultrasounds, egg retrievals, sperm samples. But what troubles critics isn't the procedures, it's women's unfulfilled desire, their grasping and circumventing. Better to wait patiently, like biblical women eventually rewarded. For most of human history, doctors knew little about reproduction. The existence of eggs wasn't confirmed until 1827. Sperm's role took another 16 years. Carl Gemzel pioneered gonadotropin to stimulate egg production, nearly abandoning his research after one patient delivered six premature babies who all died. Despite risks of multiple births and cadaver-sourced hormones that gave some patients Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, infertile couples willingly gambled. Today's fertility patients turn to each other. On YouTube, hundreds of women post instructional videos demonstrating self-administered injections. Despite ordinary backgrounds, there's a formal quality to their narration, a ritual sharing of intimate medical process. IVF takes over not just your body, but your entire life, morning appointments, waiting for results, precisely timing injections. Beyond physical demands, infertility consumes the mind completely. The abundance of treatment options creates a paradox. Each failed cycle presents new choices that lead to paralyzing anxiety rather than acceptance. 15 states require infertility coverage, but mandates vary wildly. New York excludes IVF. Arkansas caps coverage at $15,000. Maryland requires using only the patient's eggs and spouse's sperm. Rhode Island limits coverage to presumably healthy married individuals under 40. Hawaii demands 5 years of documented infertility before covering a single cycle. These restrictions exclude those with complicated diagnoses, older patients, LGBT couples, unmarried partners, and single women. In support groups, money is rarely discussed despite vastly different financial circumstances. Yet persistence, continuing treatment despite failures, ultimately determines success. Those who can afford multiple rounds eventually become pregnant. Resources, more than biology, determine outcomes. A 2012 study revealed troubling patterns. 79% of clinics featured baby photos on homepages, but only 27% listed pricing. Clinics target educated, white, upper-middle-class women with emotional appeals rather than transparent information. Despite infertility affecting men and women equally, and being more prevalent among minorities and lower-income populations, 97% of clinics showed white babies in marketing. Organizations like Resolve and Fertility for Colored Girls are working to break down these barriers. When people face infertility, they're often told, just adopt, as though it's simple. But adoption involves trauma for everyone, birth parents, adoptive parents, and the child. In the U.S., about 120,000 adoptions occur yearly, double the number of IVF births, with 3/4 of adoptive parents being infertile or subfertile. Mark and Rachel Alexander adopted Dejan from Ethiopia after Rachel's miscarriage at 39. When they met him at the orphanage in Addis Ababa, he ran across the courtyard and leaped into their arms. Despite this beautiful beginning, Dejan insisted his parents weren't dead, contrary to what they'd been told. The Alexanders eventually hired an Ethiopian investigator and discovered the aunt and uncle they'd met might actually be his parents, a common discovery where corruption complicates matters. Justice Kennedy's majority opinion in Obergefell v. Hodges recognized marriage's history of continuity and change, acknowledging evolving family structures, including same-sex couples. For couples like Gabe and Todd to have a genetically related child required surrogacy, expensive and legally complex, with laws varying state to state. It's now possible for almost anyone with resources to become a parent, though this expanding definition troubles some who emphasize biological ties. Well, diggers arrive on an unseasonably warm January morning to deepen an insufficient well, a project postponed for 6 years by 2 fine arts graduates. As drilling reaches 200 feet with no water, the parallel becomes clear. Toggling between monitoring well progress and calling pharmacies about fertility medications for a first IVF cycle. After years of less invasive treatments, at 36, it's time for this $13,000 gamble with no guarantees. The next morning at 720 feet, they've hit something miraculous, 5 gallons per minute, enough for the whole house. This victory coincides with the first IVF medication shipment arriving, Lupron, Follistim, Menopur, syringes, and detailed instructions. On transfer day, Dr. Young presented a photo of the prettiest blastocyst the embryologist had seen all year. When the embryo appeared as a spark of light on the ultrasound monitor, hands squeezed, overwhelmed by this unexpected path to potential parenthood. After one successful cycle yielding 7 embryos, there's the terror of early bleeding, followed by weekly ultrasounds. Despite resistance to medical interventions, a 26-hour labor ultimately required Pitocin and an epidural before Beatrice arrived, pink, alert, and entirely theirs. Waiting isn't about passively enduring time, but about finding meaning in liminal spaces where transformation occurs. The real art is learning to hold hope and uncertainty in the same breath, to keep drilling even when the ground seems dry.